Support for this podcast comes from Pluto TV. Need an escape? Drop into Pluto TV for a world of free TV. Stream hundreds of channels and thousands of movies and shows all for free. Yeah, free. No subscriptions, no fees. Imagine 24/7 channels of Narcos, CSI, Star Trek, Survivor, and everything else from hit movies to binge-worthy TV shows, the latest news, live sports, comedy, and more. What are you waiting for? Download the free Pluto TV app for Android, iPhone, Roku, and Fire TV and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.
WandaVision is over, but Falcon and the Winter Soldier is just getting started on post-show recaps here. It's Everything is Super. It's a transition episode as we are saying a final farewell to WandaVision. We are saying hello to Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And I myself am saying hello and farewell as well. This will be the final Everything is Super podcast that I'm going to be on for a minute. But we've got an incredible panel for you. As always, he is my least favorite person. He's the best worst person I know. Kevin Mahadeo. Hi, Kevin.
Josh, but what is Falcons if not Vision persevering?
What is Falcons if not Winter's Soldiers persevering? LaTanya Starks is in the house as well. Hi, LaTanya.
Hello. I'm here.
How are you? You're here.
I did it.
You did it.
We all did it.
We all really did it.
It's an accomplishment considering the day we're recording on, the fact that we're all here.
Generally, I just like, you know, we need more dudes. So
one more. Yeah. We've got one more on the horn as I leave the podcast. He is arriving. He's been on Everything is Super in the past, showing up for the next several weeks to hang out with Kevin and LaTanya and you, Mike Bloom. Mr. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Yes. Given a little bit of behind the scenes details, we all asked an old wizened Josh Wigler, are you going to keep going on Everything is Super for Falcon and the Winter Soldier? And he just looked out contemplatively at the lake and said, no, yeah. I don't think I will.
No, I don't think I will.
So I think this makes sense. I'm sort of the U.S. agent, right? I'm like the palatable white guy that is replacing the lead here.
Yeah, be careful. I don't know what they're going to do with U.S. agent, Mike. I don't think you want to be that guy would be my bet.
Maybe not. Want to be.
What are you handing him? That's the big question. You're not handing him a shield. What is Josh Wigler handing over to Mike Bloom?
It's my
pizza.
The pizza is sort of shield shaped. I suppose like the Josh Wigler artifact to hand over would be the Woggler's Wimbats hat from Torbjorn Frazier. Which is the bootleg Wiggler's Wombat's hat.
Oh, I got it.
The only one of its kind. And so, like, that's how you know it's the vibranium shield of Wombat's hat.
Do I really deserve it, though? I don't feel like I deserve it. I'm going to hang it up for now and just, like, contemplatively stare at it for
the
entire
season. Well, how about this, Mike? How about, like, a 6-podcast exploration of whether or not you're worthy of the Wimbat's hat? I'm so appreciative of this crew for being so cool about me needing to take some time off. The job is awesome, but it's intense and it's insane, and I want to make sure that I'm really devoted to it, and so I'm just needing to take another podcast off right now. I have full confidence that the three of you are going to do an incredible job on the show, and I think, like, as we were in the midst of, like, doing the handoff, I know that we wanted to certainly, like, say some more stuff about WandaVision, because there was so much that happened in the finale, and we also have tons of feedback that we want to get through, but also we want to set up Falcon and the Winter Soldier. So it's a jam-packed occasion, and I figure a jam-packed panel to get it all done. So that's what's going to happen here today, as we're going to say goodbye to Westview. Say hello to, I don't know, whatever. I don't think it's just one town.
Dude, do we have to change? Because you did a great job with Everything is Wonderful. Is there some sort of punniness? I know I'm sort of doing the offline stuff online here, but I wonder if this is also an excuse for crowdsourcing.
I had the thought, LaTanya, that if weeks ago my thought was going to be like, the world outside your window isn't so great right now, but here on Poster Recaps, everything is Falcon great. Everything is
what?
Falcon
what?
Super.
What's Falcon great?
Yeah, it's like sort of like it's
like a frack.
It's like a substitute. Yeah, that was the idea. Yeah,
you're out of your Falcon mind.
No, I think the substitute that I saw in the Discord was like, everything is Super Soldier. Okay. I think is the one that I saw.
Everything is Super Soldier is
everything
good
is
too.
Super Soldier is very aggressive.
It is aggressive. It is aggressive.
Everything is Falcon. Now that I get it, I like
it. Is it kind of clever?
It is kind of clever.
A triple underline kind of clever.
Like below the line clever.
Yeah, which is sort of my specialty.
Just always under the bar, Josh Wiggler. Nobody goes over. Josh doesn't go over the bar. He just limbos his Josh, like right underneath.
Any regular plebe can go over the bar, but it takes a real ingenuitive mind to go under the bar.
I live under the bar, folks.
It's called limbo. People do it at parties.
So I don't know whatever.
What are parties?
Exactly. Oh, no.
Virtual Zoom limbo.
Yes, virtual Zoom limbo.
Listen,
that is the second EP we're putting out as a band.
You figure it out. You can figure out exactly what it is you want to say. I leave it up to you. But how about this? Let us begin by saying goodbye to WandaVision. We've got feedback to get through. I also would love to just like do like one last round of Around the Horn commentary on WandaVision, if there's stuff that we feel like we didn't touch on in the finale podcast that we want to get into here. And Mike, since you weren't here for any of WandaVision, I don't know if you want to kick us off and just in terms of like, what are your takes on like not just the show maybe even, but also like Marvel's foray into television, which is not its first foray into television, but it is like Marvel Studios going in on TV in this way for the first time. So if you want to combine that with like your WandaVision takes, I think everyone would love to hear those.
Yeah. So, I mean, to that point, I think that WandaVision, not necessarily from a quality perspective comparatively, but I think we just watched the Iron Man of Marvel Studios television. To your point, Josh, there has been Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is probably the most akin to what Marvel Studios has done in the past, even though sort of non-canonical, or at least like produced in a sideline capacity that tied in maybe to some of the stuff going in on the movies. But this feels distinctly different of we're going to take some of these second bananas maybe and make a whole piece of banana bread out of them that's 9 episodes long. And so to that point, I think that this does feel like a distinct step in this direction for a franchise that has really, you know, cemented itself on serialization for going on a decade at this point. So I think that, you know, with that being said, much like the first Iron Man movie, I think I could cop a lot of similar comments and map it onto WandaVision, and that I did think it was solid. I think there was much more good than bad, even though I think in retrospect, and especially I think once the studio gets a few more series under their belt with both old and new characters, we'll look back on WandaVision and be like, yeah, it probably isn't my top ranked Marvel TV show at the moment. But I think that there's a lot of promise there with just the direction that they're looking at and how they're looking to incorporate a weekly viewing structure into the MCU that is more so about tentpole 2-hour franchise, 2+ hour, I should say, sometimes even 3+ hour franchise films. So, you know, I also want to couch some of my thoughts in the recent Assembled documentary that came out in this past week, where they did this with The Mandalorian, doing this now with WandaVision, assumingly with the other Marvel Studios shows moving forward. This is just sort of like a behind the scenes.
This documentary was longer than any single episode of WandaVision, by the way.
Yes, it truly was.
This was the hour-long episodes that they were being rumored, right? They said, Kevin Feige said hour-long episodes, but they really just meant Assembled, and that's basically it. But for those of you that didn't watch, it's essentially a behind-the-scenes look at how the series is made. A lot of eye-opening details, namely Paul Bettany's ears, which you didn't really think about until you saw him blued to the max with his ears sticking out and watching.
Someone blued him.
Exactly. I think we know what Paul Bettany's joining once, you know, the world opens back up if Vision's not in the picture anytime soon.
Arrested Development.
Or he could go to Vegas and really, you know, drum up a storm there. But it was really great to sort of, I think, when the finale left things on a note that was fine, as I think you all, you know, I think you all said, I think with varying opinions, the finale ranged from like pretty good, not the best, to maybe ended things in a problematic way. I think that this was a way to sort of like reinvigorate, at least for me, the passion that the show brought to me, seeing especially things like Kristen Anderson Lopez and Robert Lopez writing the music.
All the
details provided to like bringing in a studio audience for the 50 stuff. It reminded me why the first basically like 6 episodes of this show were so much fun to watch. And so I think it was a great reminder to sort of call back to all that, that even if the ending either landed with like a whiff or just like a fh, I don't know what's, I don't know how to onomatopoeia, like a,
that sounds like a, yeah, like a bag of lunch dropping to the ground is what that sounded like.
Exactly. So whatever noise you want to assign to it, I think that that Assemble documentary at least reminded me that, yeah, you know what? Even though there were some plot points that did not land well, the show overall, I think, was not only extremely well done, but I think extremely fun to talk about in a way that I have not experienced since Westworld, and before that, all the way back during our Salad Days of Lost.
LaTanya, what would you like to, how would you like to look back on WandaVision? Like the finale, sure, but like beyond the finale, anything that like you feel like, you know, a week out, more than a week out now from the finale dropping, like where are you at with the show? Like what are some of the predominant things that you're thinking about as you're still like chewing it over in your head?
Yeah, I've watched the show again. And
really? The whole thing?
Wow.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
I really love it.
Yeah,
I really do. I mean, I had some things to say about the finale, but I wasn't as down on the finale as I think a lot of people were. I was just annoyed that there was no accountability for a clear criminal.
Sure. Yeah.
but, you know, like that aside, I have never, probably not since 6 Feet Under, and then The Leftovers, had this type of, seen this type of exploration of grief and trauma on television before. Not in this way. I mean, obviously you have all of your like golden age of TV shows and characters, and they're all dealing with trauma and grief and all of those emotions in some ways. But many of those people are men and they're just not dealing with it. And so it's interesting to see a perspective that's like how a woman chooses to not deal with her grief is to, of course, create a pocket dimension.
As you
obviously
do.
Yeah, yeah, I did it yesterday.
you gave me the tour. It was pretty intense. Yeah,
it's like it's opening a Good Place neighborhood, basically. It's fine. Yeah.
Lots of yogurt, frozen yogurt. So much true,
yeah. I want to visit Starkville. Are you allowing visitors in?
It's Starkland.
Yeah.
Starkland. Ooh.
I like to Hollywood? Imagine, I like to imagine reality like dresses are better with pocket universes.
Oh, I mean, yes. Things are addressed. People are like, the fashion is fantastic. But anyway, yeah, I there are still so many things that are indelible for me about this show. And like listening to Mike, you know, with that classic like hindsight of we'll look back at this the way that we did Iron Man and then like rank it later is really interesting to think about, because it's one of those types of things where it's like you always love the first commodity that comes out first the most, or at least I do a lot of the time, or at least it has like a special place in your heart. And I think that for a lot of people going through everything we've been through collectively and as individuals and as families over the past year, we needed a weekly catharsis show. And despite what you think of what happened with the ending, this definitely gave us that like tome of meditation on just on grief and trauma and what it does to people and what it can do, what it can turn you into, or what it has the potential to transform you into in a positive way, and about the family that you choose, even if it's the one that you create, I guess. So I really, really loved the show for all of that stuff and for being here with me at a time in my life when I definitely needed it.
Yeah. Kevin, when we launched Everything is Super with the Marvel Cinematic Universe rewatch, getting close to a year ago, by the way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Crazy. I would love to know, when was that? When was the first Everything is Super podcast?
God, was it this weekend? Was it like...
No.
Literally, I think it was like May. I think it's May, right?
Everyone's been celebrating, you know, anniversaries of essentially going in lockdown this past week. So if truly Everything is Super is tied to that, that is just extraordinary timing.
Because Josh just left.
April 2nd. Yeah, April 2nd, 2020 was the launch of Everything is Super.
Coming into a year.
Oh my God. Wow. I'll have to make it a point to be on whatever episode of Falcon the Winter Soldier that is. I'm not missing the 1 year anniversary.
I think it's going to be like this could be episode 3. We could do like a halfway check-in point with you, Josh.
Yeah, I'll come in. But Kevin, what I wanted to talk about was like, we had
the paper anniversary, by the way.
Okay. So Kevin, let's get each other some comic books.
Make some paper Falcons. I'll make some.
Yeah,
more
I like that. Kevin, when we launched this, we had like a structure to it where like we were going to rank everything along the way.
Yes.
And so like we had that on the scale of like 0 to 6 Infinity Stones. And I think one of the things about that effort that was probably easier than to try and do this right now for WandaVision is kind of what we're talking about, like the benefit of hindsight and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like our most recent one was Far From Home. So like we still had like over a year's worth of distance. So like I feel like in terms of like any kind of like official rating, I would love to do like next year, like lock in our official scores for WandaVision, like do a rewatch, like sound off with like the year's worth of benefit of like what does the thing look like. But I would love to know, because I know that like I don't remember if we talked about this online last week or if we've talked about this offline, but I think like you had said to me like your instinct is like 4 out of 6.
Yeah, which I mean, that's the thing. Like, I agree with everything Mike said. Like, to me, this ended, like, even watching it, I'm like, this is like the Iron Man. And I know just from experience, because as soon as he said, I thought about it. Like, we had that discussion when we talked about Iron Man. You were way higher on Iron Man 1 than me.
Historical value and stuff.
Historical value and all that stuff. And I understand that, but it didn't, like, come into my, you know, overall rating. So it ended up in a 4 out of 6, which I think is exactly where Iron Man 1 landed. And I think that's where I am on this. Like, I enjoyed the show just like I enjoyed Iron Man. There's things I really love. There's things the show did really, really well. The story about grief, we've talked about that a million times over. But for me, along with the story of grief, is the acting and the sitcom stuff that they pull off is so incredible. Like, as a fan of a lot of these sitcoms that I watched, you know, growing up, or it's seen on reruns and Nick at Night, I'm a big Bewitched person. Seeing what they pulled off, the mannerisms, the tone, all of it was so incredible. Part of me wishes the show was just the sitcoms, right? But there's the stuff it did really well. But for me, there's three things it did not so well. Two of them huge for me, and one of them kind of And that did affect it in the end. And like, again, I reiterate, my ultimate area is like 4 out of 6, but
that's
like
positive. You're skewing positive.
Yeah, ultimately. Yeah. Positive, ultimately.
Above average.
Above average, right? Yeah. But like the thing, the Hayward stuff is not going to ultimately sit well, just kind of like okay, that was just a waste. Yeah. Like Iron Man 1, that's your Obadiah Stane, right? Like the complaints to Iron Man, that's your Obadiah Stane moment.
Oh, if only we had Hayward talking about how Vision was just a box of scraps.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if he was in that room and there was White Vision and it's just like, I built this with a box of scraps, and like they turn the camera and it's White Vision sitting there. A+, that would have changed everything.
It would have been great. It would have been great. And then he could have gone and shot some children anyway.
Yeah. And you would have been like, ooh, that's bad, but that box of scraps.
That line though, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe I'm turning on Hayward. Maybe
fictional Hayward we have made in our heads.
White Hayward. Oh, wait. No, that's just Hayward.
No, so he appears to me as White Hayward now, because I saw a Law & Order SVU episode with him where he was just the biggest racist.
Oh, no.
Aw, does this dude have like a type of person that he plays now?
I really hope that he doesn't.
Terrible typecast. That's so bad. I've seen shows where someone always gets cast as like the racist cop, and I'm always just like, oh God, that sucks. That is like, you just have the look and it works. Yeah. It's unfortunate.
You just gotta watch Good Girls. Yeah. You know?
Great show. Thank you. Mandy Patinkin, so good.
But beyond the Hayward thing, right? Like, so that's the least thing. The two big things for me that ultimately affect the show on a higher level is the Evan Peters of it all and the Ralph Bonerness, and of course the ending. Like that those things do ultimately bug me. The ending especially, you know, like the no accountability is such a huge thing that like does not sit well and rubs me an extremely wrong way.
Sure.
But like those things do ultimately affect it for me. And like there is great, like I said, skew positive, right? Like 4 out of 6, which I think is a fair rating for me. And we'll see where the rest of it goes. Maybe it changes further along too. Like maybe I do in a year come back and I have the Josh Wigler effect of just like, oh, but like, especially historical value in comparison to the other shows aren't as good. I guess this one's pretty good.
Yeah, WandaVision was best. That was the one.
What you're also going to have in your mind as well a year from now is you're going to have Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness in your head as well. And I do wonder if and when you had the discussion a year after the fact, how much that's going to come into play, because it's so interesting that we're sort of putting WandaVision and Falcon and the Winter Soldier right next to each other, because WandaVision had this sort of sword hanging over its entire head, if you will, saying like,
yeah, it's the company, it's the
exactly
agency.
Saying, oh, well, whatever happens here is going to directly influence what happens in Doctor Strange 2. Falcon and the Winter Soldier, as much as I have seen, there are currently no plans, at least explicitly, for a season 2, for a movie, etc. So we are looking at like a fully encapsulated 6-hour series or 6-episode series, as opposed to WandaVision, where I do think amidst the speculation, right, was this idea hanging over your head of, okay, we gotta, let's find out how this informs Doctor Strange 2. Is Stephen Strange going to be making an appearance? Is this where we get the multiverse popping up, which certainly fed into that Evan Peters conspiracy? And so I can imagine that this almost might even be like chapter one of the Scarlet Witch saga, right? And mm-hmm. and I wonder, when you have the full story together, if that includes that motion picture, does it then allow WandaVision to be viewed a different way when you know how the story ends?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, I don't think I'll change on Evan Peters. I mean, it's not the multiverseness of it all that like bugs me. I just think there's a lot of things. But anyway, sorry.
I just hope that I would like to see the dialogue shift a little bit around Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness, just because the way that it's been discussed so far has been, oh, well, Doctor Strange will fix this crazy woman.
Right, totally. Mm. Yeah.
And I would like for that. I'd like to look back, a year from now after having seen Doctor Strange the second, and be like, okay.
Doctor Strange Jr.
DS2. Yeah.
And not be like, oh, okay, so he's a doctor, so he can also help like this poor woman's mind. Or, I mean, there are lots of little like Easter egg-y things that happened in WandaVision that I'm sure we will look back on too. In the future, like, there are lots of things that are plot holes now, but it's Disney and it's Marvel. They'll be able to like figure out how to retcon it in a way. So like, for example, I'd like to know why all these like little kids on the backs of milk cartons keep popping up. Like, what does that have to do with anything? And if you're looking at the timeline of when WandaVision happened as compared to, say, when the most recent Spider-Man Far From Home happened, It's just, there's some interesting parallels going on. So
I want to see the Scarlet Witch, the movie, I want to see, like, I don't need WandaVision season 2. I think WandaVision was specific. I think we could definitely argue whether or not it's closed ended. I think, Mike, I'll disagree with your point about Falcon and the Winter Soldier, in only insofar as I don't think that any of these are ever really going to be fully closed looped. I think that's the nature of the MCU, for better, and I think often for worse, actually. I think like there's always going to be something lingering. And I think that that's the case in WandaVision. Like, if we, some of the conversations like, well, they'll deal with the consequences later, because there's more Wanda story to tell. But I think like, as far as like the specificity of WandaVision, I think I'm good. Although they did mention the Twilight Zone influences, like, it did get me, like, Latanya, it did get me, like, headcanoning, like, WandaVision season 2 is just, like, instead of, like, an homage of sitcom history, it's, like, an homage of, like, all, like, spooky television. So it's, like,
I would
Twilight
love that.
Zone, like, something freaky 70s,
I would X-Files love that 90s. If it was, like, Dark Shadows, Twilight Zone,
that'd be
like,
cool.
All of that kind
the
of-
Munsters. The scariest shows of all.
And then instead of having like a dark, twisted ending, it ends up having like a very funny, happy ending. So they sort of like invert what they did or attempted to go for on
something. I want to see more baby pictures of Vision.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So speaking of Vision, because this is something that obviously there was a lot to get to in the finale. But speaking of open ends, I mean, we sort of have a version of Vision back in the world.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, we've got Raspberry Mouth one.
Yeah, he's now in living color, and he flew off to who knows where. So I think that that's going to be also sort of like, that might also play into Multiverse of Madness too, right? Because like now there is going to be a version of Vision
and a theory
hanging out there. Go ahead.
A theory of where we'll see him.
Tell me it's in living color, except White Vision is the Jim Carrey of the cast.
Yes.
We want Fire Marshal Bill.
Bring back the entire Wayans family, please.
Paul Bettany is Fire Marshal Bill. Make it happen.
Jim Carrey as the Vision. mask style.
No.
I think we're gonna see Vision again in Armor Wars is my theory. My theory is we'll see Vision again in Armor Wars, which is the War Machine show. It's the show where like
that's
the log,
what they called that show,
Armor Wars. Yeah, because it's based on a comic book story.
It's based on a comic book story called Armor Wars.
Yeah.
Okay.
They try to steal Tony Stark's tech, right?
Right. And so, like, I expect like Stark's tech is stolen. Jarvis/Vision is sort of technically Stark tech, and I expect like that, like he will have been like reapprehended or something like that. Like that's my theory of where we'll see Vision.
Some of that was kind of laid down in Iron Man 2, right? Like when who owns the tech was such a discussion, and Tony Stark had mentioned, like, basically as long as I'm alive, Iron Man is me and I am Iron Man. So if Tony Stark is dead, who does that tech
and then like
belong
Justin,
to? So
Justin Hammer coming
off,
back would make sense, and like Justin Hammer with like the,
I mean
with
the
like
legal,
the personified Jarvis.
The legal answer is Pepper.
Yes.
That's true.
Yeah, but Gwen isn't coming back.
But Pepper doesn't remember that she is in Armor Wars, so she probably will not show up on the set.
It'd be
wild.
That's
very true. She's never showing up for television unless Ryan Murphy asks her to.
Yeah.
And she'll win an Emmy.
Yeah. But I think, like, to what I was saying before about, like, I want the Scarlet Witch movie. It's like, I feel like I'm good on WandaVision. I'm good on Wanda and Vision for a minute. If they're going to get back together at some point, it'll be really powerful if they're able to like kind of like give us, you know, they gave us a lot of the two of them together, make us work for it, show us more about the characters themselves on their own journeys. I think I would be really interested in. And I think that like the idea of Wanda Maximoff is like the like sort of like with big Tony Stark energy right now, being like the most famous person in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. She just put the thing in the hex, like she almost killed Thanos, and look at all the stuff that she's done since then. Like, that's really cool. Like, put her in the spotlight, like give her a movie or her own show. Like, I would love to see that. I think that would be really, really, really cool. I want that much more than I want WandaVision season two. Is I want like the Wanda movie or the Wanda show even. Is fine as long as it's like really centered on her, and I think you can do that without it being WandaVision season two.
And one of the reasons why I'm really glad for this show, as well as actually, I think that with the first three shows that Marvel Studios is producing here, specifically with this and Falcon and the Winter Soldier, I like the direction with what they're proceeding with, saying like, we have an ensemble here. Let's focus on some maybe secondary or tertiary characters, right? Like, you could be very easily to bite that apple and be like, let's make a Thor TV show because everybody loves Thor. But instead they say, here are some characters that we can easily expand upon. And to that I say, honestly, you know, thank you, Jack and Matt, for making me care about Wanda Maximoff and Vision in the MCU, because I'll be completely candid, they were interesting, but I mean, I'll admit through Infinity War, I was sort of like, all right, let's yada yada through these love scenes and you know, build to the conclusion of it to see what
happens. Mike Bloom has no heart, confirmed.
Exactly.
I mean, he's not wrong though. Like, I think they had moments in character, you know, people like those characters, but
Kevin
Amadeo
has no heart, confirmed. Reconfirmed.
Sorry, Josh, the heart was taking over your podcast. But I'm glad they're taking the time to really like dive deep, and especially the actors. Again, looking at this Assemble documentary, it just seems like Elizabeth Olsen and Paul Bettany are just like really fun people to hang out with.
Yeah, they just seem like buds. It's kind of great.
And so I love that they were given the opportunity to do so. And that's why I'm really excited for what's to come next as well. Because again, in the Cap movies are probably the most solid in terms of like a structured series within the Marvel franchise. That being said, Sam Wilson and Bucky Barnes have been good, but they could be better. To quote, I guess a different type of property there, and so I'm happy that at least WandaVision and hopefully this show will display the fact that like we cast really, really good actors, and sometimes we don't give them everything to do. So now let's give them that opportunity.
And they're, these are the future characters of the franchise now, right? We don't have Tony. We don't have Cap. We're not, you know, Thor's going to be off in space.
They'll
I think this is what it's doing, is help building these characters out more. And like, yeah, to Mike's point, like I like Wanda Maximoff also because of her history of the comics, which I'm familiar with. I like Vision because of the history of the comics. And I like them in the things we saw when we did the rewatch. I liked Vision a lot more in Age of Ultron and afterwards. Like, there was a lot more to that character, but we don't get a lot. Same with Falcon. We get quite a bit. But on the rewatch with Bucky, especially too, like I was like, oh yeah, we don't get enough. And my opinions of Bucky had shifted more towards, you know, my fiance of just like, what is everyone obsessed with this guy for? And it's true watching it now. But I think Falcon and Winter Soldier is going to do a job of expanding on that stuff. I like Sam Wilson already. I want more of him, and we're going to get it. And, you know, I'm interested in finding more about like the Bucky stuff. So we're going to get a little bit of that. But I also think this spawned from something people had said since Captain America and the Winter Soldier, where it was those small scenes that Bucky and Falcon had, where it was just like, can you move your seat up? Just to like the like, could you have done that the whole time?
I hate you.
Like, people were just like, these two need to be in a buddy cop film or something, you know? And so I think they're delivering on that many, many moons later to kind of like help build that out, especially for these two people. It's like, I think Josh, you and I said it right. It's, these are the two friends who aren't really friends with each other, but share the same friend. And now that friend is gone. This is George Costanza and Elaine Benes hanging out. Like, this is what this is. There's something really fun about that, and seeing that come to fruition.
There's something about that. I'm sorry, y'all. I have to admit, I am not nearly as excited about this show as I should be for someone who's podcasting about it.
Sure, that
and
happens.
And I think that it's because of the, and Kevin, you're immune to this because you don't watch any of the the advertising or like any of the trailers or anything.
Correct.
I don't think they're good. I don't think the trailers are very good, and I don't think that they are doing the job that they need to do to like get me interested in this. I am a Marvel lifer at this point, so of course I'm going to watch this show, and I'm going to podcast about this show. I will probably end up like, you know, a few weeks from now being like, boy, was I dumb. There's egg all over my face. I love this show.
That's my favorite kind of podcasting, LP. It genuinely is. I love that.
Yeah.
But maybe not also is a possibility. You know?
I just think it's probably because there's a lot of dudes. You know what I mean? There's a lot of dudes doing military industrial complex work and not for some reason recognizing that Falcon is not Falcon anymore. The mantle has been passed. And I guess the government actually gets to decide who Captain America is. And so they get to trot someone out. Right?
It's the same thing with Tony. I mean, who owns the title? Who owns the copyright to the name Captain America?
Well, let me say that on that note, LaTanya, because I certainly, coming into back in the before times when all this was initially slated out, I of the three shows that were announced, I was definitely lowest on Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Because I was like, all right, here comes some more like bang bang shoot 'em up MCU action, where at least WandaVision and Loki got weird. And as I've said on many podcasts in the past here, like, I wanted to see the MCU get weird, and it got weird.
Mike Will likes things getting weird. That's so odd. Who knew?
Exactly. So against the
character,
right?
Character.
Never going to go full bloom.
Exactly. But what I will say is, I think this will be, I wouldn't say a palate cleanser, but I'm excited for the change in tone that's going to come, as well. As much as I enjoyed the mystery box quality that came with some parts of WandaVision, I'm kind of excited to take a little bit of a break from that, even though I have seen some interviews where they're like, oh, there's just going to be larger mysteries that might even supersede WandaVision. We'll see. I'm happy that we can certainly puzzle things out, but that will not necessarily be the focus of everything, I'm imagining. But one of the things that actually made me really excited was the fact that, if I'm going to be so candid, this will be my own sort of hot take that I'll put out and reinvestigate in 6 weeks. I think we are looking upon the precipice of the most timely MCU project ever. Because there has been explicit mention by the showrunners about how they are going to use this show to tackle some modern day issues that the MCU hasn't before. I mean, you have a black man being given the shield. And he does not have the shield when the show starts, to your point, LaTanya. And I certainly think, and the showrunner has made this clear, that they are definitely going to, especially given conversations that have occurred over the past year, talked about this idea of, to be candid, can America tolerate a person of color, you know, being viewed as like the representative of their country. And that has certainly been a conversation in the nation at large in the past decade. And so I'm excited for the MCU to tackle that. Not to say like it always needs to be political all the time. I understand why people can seek escapism in some of these processes. But I think, you know, if you have an opportunity, especially with something like Captain America, which is so intrinsically tied into institutionalizing things and the government and our day to day is just like ordinary civilians, I think it would be a missed opportunity to not embrace that. Not only that, we are at a time where trust in our institutions is at an all-time low. And I think especially in a world post-Captain America, the Winter Soldier, where S.H.I.E.L.D. has been, you know, just completely brought down by Hydra. This fact that you really can trust no one is what Nick Fury tells Captain before he, you know, faked his death the first time. There's a lot of
I mean, who hasn't, you know?
Exactly.
Fake their own death?
I've got a drawer full of fake IDs to prove the point. There's a lot of really interesting themes that I'm excited are going to come out through Marvel, which has done a great job storytelling, but maybe hasn't taken the opportunity sometimes to like focus in on those types of issues. And yeah. So I'm excited for at least the opportunity for them to take the platform for a second.
See, I really love that summation of things. Like that is a great way to market a show,
yeah,
in my humble opinion, as opposed to the like shoot 'em up. You know, I'm mad at you. You're mad at me. Mm-hmm. We can't have a conversation without a woman like being like, stop it, boys, kind of thing. Yeah. You know, yeah. I love that swing on it a lot more. So I also just want to say, if you thought that we were done talking about race and institutions on this show,
100%. Yep.
You're actually wrong. And also, you don't get to choose when we do that. It's yes. not just for Black Panther. We can talk about race whenever we want.
Yes. 1,000,000%.
Yeah, I mean, I a couple of things. One, I
love when Kevin starts off a couple of things.
Yeah, well, nothing bad. If the comics which have done this has proven anything about the question of can America handle a Black person as Captain America for a large contingent, the answer is no. And that's just not even in the comics. I mean, the people reading them
who responded to them. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. And so like that is an interesting topic. And I do think the show is going to explore that. And to your point, Latanya, I do think you're not wrong. That is a way to market the show, but this is exactly why I don't watch this type of stuff beyond getting spoiled. Like I talk about, I don't want to be spoiled on stuff, which is a big part of it. But the other part of it is like, you know, for people who don't know, this is my industry. I don't want to watch that stuff. I know the sausage being shoved into that tube, and I don't want to necessarily have to see it for something I'm excited about.
Evocative, mm-hmm. Kevin. Nothing if not a wordsmith, my friend.
Yes.
Yes.
No, I am, and I chose the word specifically.
Yeah, I know, you're good, you're good.
I
you're
said
good.
Sausage, damn it.
Yeah.
So, sausage.
And shoved into tubes. So, like, there's that part of it, and then exactly that, the interviews, like, if I had heard that interview of just, like, there's a mystery that's me bigger than WandaVision, I would have thrown up. Like, there's just so much in there that knowing how the PR machines and how this marketing stuff works and how they appeal and targeting on, you know, on social, like, I'm familiar with all that. And I'm just like, I don't need any of this.
I do think, sorry, that like Kevin, an incredible podcast series someday could be like you just destroying trailers.
Oh, yeah. It's like CinemaSins, but just for trailers.
I just want to throw that. You catch that. Carry on.
Well, it is fascinating.
Sorry, CinemaSins. Hire me.
Mad Max Fury Road is probably one of the best trailers in modern history. It's a phenomenal trailer, but it did a failure in terms of like actually highlighting who the main character of that movie was, which is Furiosa. And that was choice, right? So like we end up in these situations where it's one of the best modern day trailers because it did the job of what it needed to do and revitalized the sound design and importance of music in trailers for modern context. But it didn't do the thing, which is like highlighting that vital character, because Furiosa is such a huge part of that film, but she was not such a big part of the sell of the trailer. Anyway, there's a lot in there. There's a lot that happens when it comes to making this stuff. So that's why it's tough for me to look at that. But for me, I'm excited about it because I just, thinking about the show, assumed that was the direction like the show was going to explore based on what Mike said. Like, that's what I thought it was going to be, right? Like, how is America going to handle the idea of a Black Captain America? How is the government going to handle that? Because the government thinks they own that name. I'm certain they do. The same way they think they own Tony Stark's armor and tech.
It's probably in the Sokovia Accords that the government actually does own it. If you look back at Civil War, which I have recently.
Yeah, he says the shield doesn't belong to you.
It's the property of the United States federal government.
Yeah. So it's all there. And I think that sort of exploration is going to be really interesting and fascinating. And, you know, and the buddy copness. I do think the interplay, like just from even, you know, not recently, but I have seen stuff before, like way back, especially when we were doing the rewatch between Anthony Mackie and Sebastian Stan, you know, talking. They have good behind the scenes chemistry together. And I think some of that can translate onto here. They really like making fun of Tom Holland, which is wild, but like,
they're always giving him juice. I love it.
Yeah. So like, you know, all that stuff I think is going to contribute to like what could be a really great show. But we are going to comment on the stuff that it fails at. And, you know, if they fail with the female characters, that's going to be commented on. If they fail dealing with certain things about race, that is going to be commented on. And, so going into the show with, hope, as I did with WandaVision, doesn't mean that the hope is going to blind me through a lot of stuff. It, you know, it's still there. I'm still me. There's no point in which I won't look for things that I can rant about.
Totally.
Yeah.
I'm excited about the show for a bunch of reasons. One is I'm so excited to see them, what they do with Daniel Bruhl coming back as Baron Zemo. Yes.
MCU
villains.
Well, complete with the comics outfit the
mask,
as well, right?
He's got the mask. I'm very hyped about that. I am so mad and sad still about Lodge 49 getting canceled. But Wyatt Russell... Wyatt.
Yeah.
Who is going to be coming in here and playing the U.S. agent and is almost certainly going to have like the most punchable face in the Marvel Cinematic Universe for a long time. For a long, long time. Son of Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
Yeah. You also know him from the Black Mirror episode Playtest.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yep, he played the Call Mom. Really, everyone called their mom after that episode.
And he is, if you haven't seen Lodge 49, I just love it so much.
Is Lodge 49? I thought you made that up when you just said that.
No. It was speaking of marketing, it was really poorly marketed. But it's also like kind of a show that like, I don't know, Kevin, this would be another reason why I would love that podcast. It's like, how do you market this show? Because it doesn't have a really
much job.
I'd be happy to do it with you. I also worked in advertising and marketing.
I'm here to listen to it. I think that the show was like really hard to market, but he basically plays like sort of like this like Don Quixote in modern day sort of like knight. He's part of like an order of knights technically in like Southern California surf culture, and it's so weird. And
I was like, Daniel Bruhl?
No. Wyatt Russell.
Daniel Bruhl is out here on the beaches just surfing.
And there's just like, there's no world in which he is playing a character that is anything remotely like Dudley, Dud, the character that he played, who was just unbelievably great. So I'm excited to see like his versatility, and also to headcanon that since he's Kurt Russell's son, that the U.S. agent is going to be Ego the Living Planet's other son and therefore Star-Lord's
half-brother. That's really funny.
That's how I shall headcanon that. But I'm really excited about a lot of the casting. I am, I would say, less excited and more like really curious, borderline nervous to see how like Marvel handles some pretty heavy topics.
Yeah, especially following the end of WandaVision.
Yeah,
right?
I totally get that.
Ooh, that was a bit of a stumble. I'm a little concerned they're going to stumble again on this one. But
I think like anyone who's like coming into the podcast, I won't be here, but my expectation is like you're going to call what you see and you're going to talk about what you see because you're podcasters and that's what you do. And I think that this is going to be a very big canvas to get into some heavy shit, and with also like a huge couple of scoops of crazy action on top of it, and hopefully some zingers or funny lines and great characters and stuff. But this is gonna be thematically rich, whether like that's because they did it well or because they didn't. It will cut that way either way, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there'll be a lot of things to talk about.
Yeah,
and like, look, some tone show, like I get it too, right? Like some tone, marketing aside, it doesn't matter because some tones or styles of shows are not going to probably hit everyone. Like I talked about this actually for Captain America and Winter Soldier, where objectively, I know, like, it's a great movie. People ranked it really, really high. It didn't get a six from me because at the end of the day,
you're not like a huge spy guy, right?
Exactly. I'm not a huge spy guy, right? Okay. Like, and same thing. I loved Logan. Logan achieved, I think, a little bit more because I'm not a huge Western person, but it did such good, did a good job of making me like Westerns. So I think that's what it comes down to. If, you know, not like not every show is going to be for everyone. And even if it's objectively a great show, if the style and genre isn't your fit, it's going to get a 5.4 out of six, right? Like, it's never going to hit the full six, even if it's objectively a perfect film for certain people. And so I think there's a little bit of that from, I'm not saying for Mulan, but just in the general public, right? Like, not everyone's going to land on the show because it's not their genre. And I think that's okay. Not everything can be for everyone. It's just it's an impossibility.
I want it all to be for me.
I want a bean feast.
What is a bean feast? I want zero part of that. As a person who doesn't normally like beans, no. A bean feast is a nightmare.
Just go from the sausage factory surrounded by anglerfish to the bean store. Get that bean feast going, Kevin. You won't regret it. Well, I mean, talking about the titular characters a bit, because actually I recently rewatched Captain America: The Winter Soldier as of like. An hour ago, right before we came on to record, I just finished it. And, you know, it's as interesting as those Marvel Legends videos might be, right? Of like, here's a super cut of all the
moments. Is interesting the word we're using?
I mean, listen, they certainly help as a refresher, right? If you're not going to like watch the movies that feature these characters.
And they're for people who have not kept up with the universe, right.
Done a full rewatch and podcast every single movie.
It's an interesting watch for the two titular characters here because Falcon, I think, again, you know, Winter Soldier is probably his biggest movie so far. He showed up in Civil War and then had a couple of moments here and there in the Infinity War Endgame duology. But I mean, this is a guy who has an incredibly rich history. What he tells Steve Rogers is like, you know, I lost my wingman. And that's an event that really, I think, sent him into an interesting depressive pit that he was climbing his way out of by the time Steve Rogers passed him on the left several times. And so I do wonder if...
The wingman is clearly going to be the secret bad guy of the series. He's not dead. He's still alive out there. And he's going to be played by Al Pacino.
Definitely Goose, right? It's definitely Goose.
Oh, yeah, exactly. He's going to come back, like 30 years later? No, he's actually alive the entire time.
For the love of Pete, give him his canonical cat. That's all I'll say. Give the Winter Soldier his kitty.
No, but I do think I've been reading up on Captain America, Sam Wilson, which is a recommendation from Torby, as well as I know, Kevin, you recommended it in the Discord. And I was like, oh, man, now I kind of miss him having a real life Falcon. I miss the actual Red Wing, not like the little drone. But I think to that.
Weird for this grounded Marvel Cinematic Universe. We can't have a telepathic Falcon connection in the same world.
Not certainly in the world of talking raccoons.
Yeah,
that
exactly.
Guns.
No, yeah.
But they're trash pandas.
Yeah, he's a trash panda, not a raccoon.
But I do think. That
I thought he was a rabbit.
There is sort of like in looking at the post Captain America world, there is this idea of companionship. And again, I don't want to spoil the trailers too much, but there is a moment where Bucky says, you know, we're not partners, we're not co-workers, like we're just sort of happen to be standing adjacent to each other while accomplishing the same thing. But I am excited for Sam to explore that idea because he did have sort of a wingman in Cap for a while. But now that he's gone, I could imagine, and that's just the way I think that these stories are naturally told, that that's not going to be the thing. But I'm excited about the Bucky stuff as well, and I completely agree with you, Kevin. The Bucky reveal is so fun, but I kind of feel like they've dropped the ball with him the past few movies, especially. I mean, in the comics, Bucky becomes Captain America, complete with like his out-of-nowhere camo pants that he wears alongside the Captain America shirt, which looks...
Which is a phenomenal run. Another high reco is the Brubaker, all of it, from the Steve Rogers part to the Bucky part, which drew a lot of influence for what we've seen so far, and probably will touch on some of the things we're going to see, I think.
But I think if, actually, linking this back to WandaVision, if you are talking about consequences, I think Bucky does have a moment in Civil War where I think he's talking to Steve and basically says, like, yeah, I did a lot of bad shit. And Steve's like, no, you didn't hide your duty. He's like, no, I still did it at the end of the day. And they made it very explicit that that's going to be Bucky's arc this season. It's going to be him really coming to terms with that. And again, your mileage may vary.
I can't wait for the scene where the Fratelli brothers are shaking him down and he's talking about the time. And the worst thing I ever did was the movie theater. I want Winter Soldier to go full chunk.
Yes.
And then Falcon just comes in smashing through the window with the, hey, you guys.
Who's right. Who's Sloth in this case? Would that be like you bring in like Armadillo or something, like a big hulking figure?
Just to be like, Black Widow is or is not out, because this is your chance to bring in David Harbour, I suppose, as
I guess that would, yeah, chained up in the basement that he's forced to fit down with. But I'm excited for that regard as well, that I think that, again, to go back to my point before, these are two characters who have pretty weighty backstories from both a comics and even like hinted at throughout the films, that just due to pure real estate, we have not had an opportunity to explore. Even someone like Sharon Carter, a former Brand Steel winner on Everything Is Super, is going to have someone who's also going to have their arc.
That's a thing that I must have been here for, and I have no memory of.
Yeah, believe it or not.
I remember Thaddeus Ross winning, and then I was just like, this is...
Wait,
this
that sucks. Happened?
She was the winner. She was the winner of Survivor Civil War.
Am I okay?
You can't remember every Brand Steel that Mike Bloom participated
that's
in.
Like,
just
that's
impossible.
Actually crazy. Like, I have actually no memory of
that. Do you
that.
Know what? I think we need people. Can someone please make a Legends video about Brand Steel?
so that people can remember what happened to the Brand Steels.
Can you get on that? Also, while you're on that, if some like nice sugar daddy patron wants to take all of these different titles and send them my way, then... I'll figure out a way to get you my address.
Wow.
But even someone like Sharon Carter or even Zemo, I think, Kevin, you said it in the Civil War podcast, right? That like Zemo was an awesome villain, if maybe a little underutilized in Civil War, considering that the titular Civil War was the one that took focus, not necessarily the guy pulling the strings behind the scenes. So I'm grateful that this show is going to explore like the Captain America universe has engulfed so many different people in the three films it's put out there so far. Now that he's gone, we can sort of take the time to flesh out all these people, because they also have their own backstories to explore.
And I don't want to, like, we will see what happens, but you know, this can also be a show about a different type of exploration of grief. I mean, I mentioned, you know, I joke with the George Costanza Elaine thing, but like, it is kind of that these two people were connected to one person that they both, you know, had a deep connection to, and that person's gone. So how do you deal with the grief of that person gone with this other person? Because like they are going to be bonded with each other through this and working together. Like, so I think there is going to be a little bit of that exploration as well. I don't think it'll be as heavy as WandaVision, which was focused so much on it. But I think we're going to see a couple different themes explored in here, which would be really interesting. But in my head now, I'm also trying to figure out like who's George and who is Elaine. I feel like Falcon's Elaine, right?
Who is the worst dancer between the two?
Worst dancer. Well, I've seen Anthony Mackie dance like on TV, and he's not good at it.
Yeah,
disappointing.
Well, disappointing.
I think Bucky's really good at doing the robot, right? Because he has that metal arm. He's just the one dancer.
I'm excited to see them unleash these two actors. Because Anthony Mackie is 42 years old. He's been like in the
wild.
Game. I can't believe that.
When
he's
I found
42.
That out, I was just like, he's what?
he's been in the game for a while. And like the way that I kind of first got introduced to him was so long ago, I can't even remember what it was. But I remember him explicitly being in. I'm sorry.
Do you remember genre?
I remember the Hurt Locker is the one I first think of him in.
Yeah, that was Falcon and the Hawkeye soldier.
It very much was.
Yeah, I mean, the two Birdmen would have been side by side with each other.
He went to Juilliard. Like, he's got some chops. Like, you know what I mean? He played Martin Luther King Jr. in that drama All the Way that I don't know if you all saw on HBO that was about, like, all the ways in which Lyndon B. Johnson was just trying to, like, screw over Dr. King. He's got just like all kinds of, and I thought that what he did in terms of Black Mirror was fantastic. So like I really loved him breaking down kind of like the traditional like kind of like black masculinity.
Oh, and he did that with another MCU star. He played with Winston Duke, right? With M'Baku.
Yeah, that was Yaya.
Was it Yaya?
I thought it was Winston Duke.
No, it was another episode.
It was Yaya, though, who from Black Panther from Aquaman, and of course, well, spoilers. He was also in Watchmen, is what I'll say.
Yeah. So I'm excited about that. And, like, I don't know how many people know this, but I'll, like, make it quick. It's just, so a lot of people my age know Sebastian Stan as Carter Bazin from Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
And he was like surprisingly good on that show. Like he acted way better than he needed to act when he was on a show called Gossip Girl, right? And I've seen some like plays that he's done online before, and he's actually like kind of a fantastic actor as well. So I can't wait to see what they do with all of the like trauma and just kind of how people who are in like this traditionally masculine space deal with the trauma and like losing a friend that's mutual. You know, it is the kind of like move your seat up. No, I won't. But, you know, about life for these two. So I'm very excited to see these two actors, no pun intended, spread their wings.
Yes.
In this,
I think the pun
project.
Was slightly intended, at least.
And let's not forget, slightly. If we're talking Sebastian Stan, his other masterpiece during his younger days, the movie The Coven, in which he co-starred with Taylor Kitsch and had the famous line, "I'm going to make you my weeotch."
My weeotch?
Correct.
Wait, what?
Things that, is that are made real. Up by Kevin for 100.
I saw The Coven in theaters because, of course, I did. And it was years later as I'm watching these things, and I was just like, I saw Bucky show up, and I'm like, "Yeah, is that the dude from The Coven?"
Is that
and
the
then
dude
I
from
looked
Coven?
It up, and I was like, "It is." And then I found out he was also in like Once Upon a Time, which is the main reason I went to watch Once Upon a Time.
Oh, he regretted a little bit of that decision.
He did. I was so impressed about that because
he was so good.
For a while, he was only on like two episodes because he became the Winter Soldier.
He did a lot of jobs for Marvel. He was just like, "All right, one episode here, one episode there."
He's in the mouse's pocket, and he was also similarly tortured there. He played like the Mad Hatter whose like daughter had gotten kidnapped. And so he was like a slave to making hats for this like overlord. It's Sebastian Stan likes to play tortured people, I suppose, or at least by bad scripts in the form of The Covenant.
He's very good in he was great in I, Tonya, I thought.
Oh yeah, as a Galuli.
Oh, yeah. Jesus.
Yeah. He was
good. Very talented like, actor. Their careers are so versatile.
They're both great. They're really
both
good.
Fantastic.
And look, like the fingers crossed version, right, is that like, I don't know, like if these shows are done right, that the reason why it's episodic TV as opposed to a movie is like so you can use the unit of an episode of television to dig really deep into a character. Exactly. And when you've got some incredible actors behind it, LaTanya, like you hope that that versatility is going to come out.
Yeah. And just real quick, I just love the idea of these two kind of like finding friendship along the way of whatever happens. You know what I mean? Because I'm pretty sure it's a Disney Marvel property that the two of them will be bonded no matter what happens at the end. And so it's a different type of relationship exploration, which I think is great. Yeah. There's just not enough shows about men, y'all.
There aren't. And I think it is something that's been wanting in the TV space for a time. So I'm pretty excited about this show about dudes. So before we close out, I want to turn the microphone over to the audience with some final sign off thoughts on WandaVision. A lot of people who wrote in the Poster Recaps patron Discord with their final thoughts about the show. I'd like to give a shout out to some people who had some thoughts. I'm just going to do a lot of reading right now, if that's okay with everybody. This comes from Josiah first. I think this finale, the reception to the finale is ultimately going to suffer from over theorizing. It was a pretty simple ending to a great show. That's the Josiah take. From Bill. Bill says, "I don't really know the comics. I've taken in all the theorizing, but the Wanda and Vision goodbye scene was earned and beautiful. And that's the kind of stuff I care about. I get that some may not love that. No big reveal happened here, but I loved it." From the great aforementioned Torby. Torby said it was a good episode. I'm totally fine with the notion of there being no big twists, but I was just a little whelmed by the episode in terms of the finale beats. Torby has since reached out to me from this take to say, like, not me, the person who's completely reversing my take on the WandaVision finale. So I think it rose in estimation for Torby as of like 5 days ago. From Tommy, not of Tommy and Billy. Tommy says, "At the end of the day, it was a series about Wanda and Vision, and it did that beautifully. Anything else was us putting our own expectations and would have been a bonus, which was set up a ton. But the amount of character development we saw from both characters is more than we saw in any of the movies." And then Tate says, "After watching the finale, I could say I ultimately really enjoyed the show, even if it was imperfect. What excited me initially was the world-bending framework of jumping through decades of sitcom parodies. That intrigue surpassed my expectations. The progression, the reveals, and the inevitable theorizing weren't handled at the standard I expected from the MCU, but the performances were incredible, and I'm thankful to have spent so much time with these characters and actors. Teyonah Parris is a star.
Oh, yeah, she is. Well, she's going to the stars, quite literally.
Some more so goodbyes.
Good. Love
some
more. Her.
Yeah, she's incredible. Latanya, did you hear about the deleted scene, by the way?
Oh, the one where it was supposed to be Ralph.
Yeah.
So there's this deleted scene apparently where we were going to see Monica and the kids and Ralph in like an extended chase sequence from Senior Scratchy, the rabbit that would have ended up being like an evil minion of Agatha. Yeah, and I guess that they shot it. They shot it, but they like didn't like, I don't know.
They couldn't finish the effects in time, I'm pretty sure. They were like working on the finale. They just got done working on the finale.
How dare you not finish that in time? You kidding me?
You hire a team and you get
hire
that
a
done.
Team and you give me Senior Scratchy chase sequence now.
Well, especially with like, I totally agree with a lot of the discourse you all had last week about the final fight, how it's, maybe this is a hot take on my part. I kind of feel like on average, the last third of a Marvel film is usually its weakest in that, like you said, for some reason, it always
Kevin
has
and I
to
have
be,
talked about that yeah. all the
it,
time.
It always
yeah,
has
we
to be
agree.
A big fight. And there are exceptions like the aforementioned Doctor Strange Dormammu stuff that when that happens, you're like, oh, this is great. This is unconventional. And Latanya, I totally get your points about how it was fantastic to see two women be the one to really, you know, go not necessarily fist, more so like great balls of fire in that regard. For me, the whole problem was the rhythm of it. Like a fight is supposed to be a piece of music and it felt like we were changing keys every four measure with like, first you get hit by a car and then a couple scenes and then, oh, we're going back to Salem and then we're coming back. So I think if you throw in like a kaiju battle with a giant Senua Scratchy, like I'd love it. That's something they haven't done
some
before.
Some type of giant demon being thrown into the battle would be great because it involved like Jimmy and Darcy too.
Yeah.
This whole deleted scene.
Yeah. So, I read some theorizing that people thought that maybe Kat Dennings like couldn't be on set for whatever reason, which is why they sort of like tacked on like Darcy hitting Hayward with the funnel cake truck. That's why I don't think you ever see Kat Dennings in the same shot as anybody else in the finale.
No, that's probably also true. Like that. Yeah. So it was the combination of COVID and, you know, shutting down the production and people's schedules, like, people who are on Marvel are clearly in demand.
Yeah.
But yeah, come on. All right, we're going to have to raise the money for this.
Yeah. No, we don't. Marvel's
this
got
is, this.
This
is the we're most important
this
cause of our time.
This is not. They're okay.
This is not.
Release the Feige cut.
I think this is the Feige.
You threw the screen.
I think this is the Feige cut.
Oh, don't activate Kevin.
A couple of final goodbyes from the listeners. This is from Ariel. It's like I always say, if it makes me cry, I cannot deny. Okay, I never say that. But emotionally, Ariel's the best. The Ariel that does not suck. Ariel says, emotionally, this 100% hit me in the feels and was so well earned as far as Wanda and Vision's histories and emotional journeys. Such a sweet goodbye and hello. I've always loved them together and now so much more. And I'll leave it to Zach for our final piece of feedback. Zach P, who wrote in, this quote really stuck out to me in the finale. We've said goodbye before, so it stands to reason we will say hello again. Maybe they meant it literally, but I took it metaphorically, sort of like Desmond, see you in another life, brother. We say goodbye to family members, pets, friends, etc., and we hope to say hello to them again sometime. Just another quote on grief that really stood out to me.
Really had to end it on Lost, didn't you, Josh? You did
yes,
that on purpose.
They really
you
had to.
Actually didn't
to.
Do it on
hey,
purpose.
You know, it's his last podcast and everything is super for a time. It was just as, it's still kind of your birthday.
It isn't, you know.
I mean, quite literally, it's not. Hard, but
LT, I definitely appreciate what you're going for there, though.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
it's nice to know at the end of the day we've got each other's backs.
Their birthdays for like weeks on end.
I know. No, I know. But I do suppose that is a good opportunity for me to say we have said goodbye before at the end of podcasts. So it stands to reason I shall say hello again sometime. But for now, this is goodbye for me to Everything is Super for a Minute. Really, really pumped to see how Falcon the Winter Soldier takes shape, and really excited to see how the podcast takes shape. Mike, just keep it like tight. Rein it in. Don't go too full bloom, please.
Don't go full bloom.
God.
Do it.
Please.
Oh, yes, Josh, you know I can absolutely do that. No problemo. Just give me cool. the keys and I'll handle this baby totally
be
fine.
Cool. Right. Be
not a
cool.
Stretch on her.
Be cool. Yeah.
Thanks, Cameron.
Be cool. Yeah. When Mike Bloom went to anyway.
I'm really podcast through the window right now.
I'm really excited about it. I'm really excited to hear what Kevin thinks. I'm really excited to hear what LaTanya thinks. Like it's gonna be fun as a listener. I'm really pumped about it. And I know the podcast is in beautiful wings instead of hands.
Beautiful talons.
Did we all grow wings during this podcast? Awesome.
I love everyone on this podcast. If you will indulge me, I will just take a moment to single one person out that a big piece of why I have been as sane as I have been, which is to say not totally sane over the course of the pandy, has been that for basically every single week for a year, I've talked to Kevin. You know, I have spent like an hour at least talking to Kevin, who is like one of my oldest friends at this point, going back over a decade. And Kevin, like the saddest thing about this for me to like actually be sentimental towards you for a second is that like I won't podcast with you for a few weeks.
Josh, I'm not gonna lie, literally before this podcast, Robin and I were talking about that for a while, just the fact that like, cause you know, telling her that, you're stepping back for understandable reasons and everything. And she's just like, oh my God, this means that like you and Josh are not going to be talking for the first time in this whole mess. It's been a constant for me.
You really have. Like you've been like, I think like we were, you know, we've been tight for years, but I think like this is like tightened us even more, which is odd because I used to like see you like six times a year for a week at a time. I'd live with you guys. And like in this strange way, like I feel like this is just like, you know, strengthened our bond even more. So I'll be back for sure because you're not going to keep me away from Kevin Mahadeo for too long. I think.
Yeah, I would not accept that. Or I'm just going to start texting you at odd hours of the night. Be like, hey man, how's it going?
Yeah. Aww.
Yeah. You know,
because what is a podcast if not friendship persevering?
Yeah. I hope so. I hope that's the case.
What is a podcast if not two guys working out their situations together?
Yeah. But Kevin, I hate to admit it publicly. I will miss talking to you every week. Very, very, very much. So
let's tape it back now.
Yeah, I know.
It's out there in the universe.
But
take
I'll be,
it back. It's already
I'll,
out there.
I'll be back, much like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'll be back.
or King George, depending on your...
plenty of things happening in post-show recaps land. To list them all would be to spend another 20 minutes here. So just go and seek out the stuff. There's so much good stuff. There's incredible stuff. The Discord is crazy. You want to be there even if you don't think that you do. You do. Trust me, you do. Patreon.com/post-show recaps where you can hang out with all four of us. On the reg, we're always available to talk to you about your favorite shows. We play Dungeons and Dragons. We have crazy casino games. Like the Discord is truly the happiest place on the internet. And I will certainly be there giving you my takes on Falcon the Winter Soldier in text form, if not in podcast form. So consider signing up. Support the podcast, patreon.com/postshowrecaps. I will at this point say farewell. Shall see you again. And the podcast will return with the three of these incredible people talking Falcon and the Winter Soldier next week. Until then, everybody, take care. Bye-bye. I don't know why I always say like I'm flying away. I guess it is more appropriate since...
In this case, you're falling off a helicarrier this time.
I'm falling off a helicarrier. Bye-bye.